The Workin' Sports Podcast is brought to you by Georgetown University. Get this, if you've been struggling to find time to get your master's, you know it's vital to your career growth, but you just don't have the time. Georgetown offers a part-time master's in sports industry management that offers flexible options to take classes online, on campus, or through a combination of both. It's flexible. We love flexible. Flexible means it's ideal for working professionals. And seriously, who can afford not to be a working professional? But beyond just being flexible, it's also an incredible program that prepares you to excel in the global sports industry. You'll leave the program with the communication, business, and leadership strategies that position you for success. To learn more about the program, visit scs.georgetown.edu/workinsports. Seriously, get more info, use the link I just gave you. scs.georgetown.edu/workinsports. All right, let's start the countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hey everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning for workinsports.com, and this is the Workin' Sports Podcast. We all have big dreams for the sports industry, right? I mean, none of us grew up thinking, I dream someday of being a mid-level manager, working nights, weekends, and holidays with the hopes of eventually moving out of my parents' house. No, of course not. We all dream bigger than that. We dream of being a sports agent, leading an organization, anchoring SportsCenter, coaching LeBron's kid, being a CEO, running an NFL draft. These are big goals, big dreams. But you have to leave them in the background for a little bit. Don't ignore them. Don't forget that they exist. Because they are what guide you. They have a huge role in your life and success. But for right now, you have to focus on the steps. You see, no one starts out at the big goal. They build systematically to reach their dream. Anchors on SportsCenter start out as a sideline reporter for the rodeo in Pocatello, Idaho. They learn their craft. They make mistakes. They build their style and point of view. They refine their writing and communication skills. They understand the entire production and staffing and budgets. And then they graduate to Champaign, Illinois. Maybe 5 years later, ESPN notices them. And they end up doing sideline for a Wednesday night Toledo versus Akron college football game. It's a build. That's the point here. I'll task every one of you listening with this chore. Take your big dream, hold it, know what it is, keep it in the back of your mind, but break it down into steps. If you want to be a sports agent, what are the steps you need to get there? Focus on the steps. Take today's guest, Dennis Adamovich, CEO of the College Football Hall of Fame. He didn't graduate college and become CEO of the College Football Hall of Fame. He didn't become CEO of anything. He spent 8 years at a major brand, Coca-Cola. He worked up from within this global brand to a point where he had 110 staff members he was responsible for. 110, that's crazy. He oversaw the sports marketing and sponsorship efforts for this huge brand. He managed over $150 million in brand funds. And that was just the first 8 years of his career. The next 15 years, he was senior vice president of Turner Broadcasting. He took all the steps. He mastered the business of sports. He managed people and budgets. He landed sponsorship deals and negotiated deals across the board and much, much more. These were his steps that prepared him to reach that lofty goal of being the CEO. Now, after making all these moves and having all these proof of concept moments showing that he could do anything in the sports industry, well, becoming CEO was just a natural extension of all he had done to that point of his career. He reached his big goal by following steps to get there. Dennis Adamovich has helped turn the College Football Hall of Fame into a jewel of downtown Atlanta. I've personally been twice now, and it's one of the must-see stops when you visit Atlanta. And he joins us this week to share a little more insight into his role and how he's grown in the industry. Here's Dennis Adamovich. Hey, Dennis, how are you doing today?
Good to hear from you, Brian. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We've had a lot of different types of guests on this show, all varying types of experience, but I really think there are few guests that I've had with as much experience as you. So thank you for lending your expertise to our audience.
Oh, my pleasure. I love doing these kind of things to put forward as much as you can, you know?
Yeah, it's true. You know, we're trying so much to help the younger generation just understand the options that are out there and things that have gotten people to the top of their profession like you are. So to be able to have this conversation is really empowering for our audience. So let's start for this. Let's start at the beginning a little bit for you. At what point did you kind of figure out you wanted to pursue sports as a career path? What led you down that path, and how did you kind of figure that out?
Well, you know, in my heart and in my core, I always knew that I would be doing something in sports. Didn't specifically say to myself I was going to, you know, go into sports marketing. I was a marketing major from the University of South Florida. And probably the best advice I ever got was just try to get some experience and look around when you're in there getting experience. And I happened to be in the right place at the right time. I came out of school. I went into the agency business. I worked for McCann Erickson, and I was working on a bunch of multinational accounts. And I happened to be working on Cadillac dealers business on the local region. And they picked up, they started the senior PGA tour. And I was a young guy doing all the right things. And they asked if I wanted to go on tour on the East Coast leg, kicking it off in South Florida and working up the coast. And once I did that, I knew that I was some form or fashion going to be involved in sports marketing, entertainment marketing for the rest of my life. And that's where it all got started. But it was just getting in, looking around, understanding how the business works and how sports plays a role pretty much in most brands, major national brands, fulfilling, you know, a brand promise.
Yeah, you spent a long time at Coca-Cola as well, and it was just at the National Sports Forum, and I know that it was down there in your area, down in Atlanta, and there was someone connected to sports marketing from Coca-Cola, and I laughed as he said. He said, back in the day, our perception was, if it moved, sponsor it. If it didn't move, paint it red. And then he talked about all the different sports experiences and all the different things that they get involved in sports, and you had a pretty large role in sports marketing while at Coca-Cola. What was that experience like?
Yeah, so I moved to Atlanta working on the agency side of the business, and Coca-Cola asked if I would come over and work in sports for Coca-Cola USA. The gentleman who you were just speaking of, I think, is Jeff Cottrell.
Yeah, was.
Jeff worked for me over at Coca-Cola. I worked on NASCAR, and you know, we had the Coca-Cola is one of those brands that you really have to laser very focused on why you have a property and how you're going to use it, how to connect with the consumer, and ultimately, you know, sell more cases off the shelf. And Jeff's the right guy to be doing that over there. But my experience was working on all the major intellectual property that the company had and activating those brands nationally in the U.S., and making sure that consumers understood why we were associated with those properties, be it Sprite with the NBA or Coca-Cola with the NHL or, you know, or on and on and on. So it was really trying to get the most value out of working with the leagues and the partnerships.
So in addition to being an executive at Coca-Cola, you're also at Turner Broadcasting, and now you're the CEO of the College Football Hall of Fame, the Chick-fil-A College Football Hall of Fame. But I'm curious about your mentality as much as I am about the day-to-day roles. What would you kind of consider, looking back at your different leadership positions, what would you consider the most important traits or skills you've developed which have allowed you to thrive in this environment of executive leadership?
I think probably the best skill that a CEO has is understanding relationships and constituents and people. Right. So you're not only the people that work for you, but the people that you work for, and how you build those relationships. It's critically important. And, you know, I know that's a cliche, but it is true. If you're great in building relationships and ultimately understanding how to develop strategy and get you where you get to, you need the people piece to be most successful. And that's your own people and working across the border on with other folks too. So relationships have been, I think, key. And also from a skill set standpoint, just communication. I think the more open and honest and transparent you could be without, you know, divulging too much is really important, and clear communication and expectations on a role. So the people piece, I always tell other students and folks that are coming through, you really have to learn how to build relationships. And I call it being a bit of a chameleon. You have to understand, you can be talking to one person, you have to look and be a certain way, but then you also have to adapt, being adaptable on how you talk and when you talk and how you say it is really important.
Very. So I had a boss once that told me the most important part of my job wasn't the day-to-day journalism. It was hiring a strong staff around me. What's been your approach to hiring and developing your team? Because clearly in all these roles, you weren't doing it alone. You had help, you had team, you had a group you were working with. What was your approach to developing that?
I've been incredibly blessed on the people that I've worked along with. Probably most CEOs would tell you this. Good CEOs will say they hire people that aren't like them, right? Good CEO understands what they don't have, and that's what you hire towards. So you have to understand what your own gaps are, and you better surround yourself with great people. And hiring great staff and people and folks that know what you don't, and being comfortable in that space and that never threatened is so important to success. And really looking for people that are dedicated, and are passionate around what you do. I mean, I'm working in the college football space now. People understanding that space and knowing that they're passionate about it and wanting to learn is really important. But hiring good people is a delicate and a skill that most people think that they need to hire more like who you are. And it's the exact opposite. You don't want to hire people like you. You want to hire people that aren't like you, have diversity, have different thinking.
No, that makes a lot of sense. You don't want to duplicate. You have somebody that can accentuate where you are not quite as strong. Makes perfect sense to me. As a CEO, you're the leader of the organization. You are the one that everybody looks to and kind of sets the tone and the culture and the experience for within that workforce. To you, what makes a good leader? And how did you kind of learn the skills to become one? Because that seems like something that may be hard to be taught. Maybe you learn by example. Maybe you learn by observing. But how did you kind of get there? How did you become a leader and learn to become in that, fill that role?
Observation. I mean, I've really looked at people in my life that have influenced and been my mentors and watched how they lead, watched by, learning and trying to emulate some of that. So a lot of that is just being a student. Always being a student. I'm still a student today. I'm always admired great leaders and how they're doing what they're doing and how they influence change and how they influence people and get them motivated towards an end goal. But a big piece of that's culture. You got to make people believe that ultimately you're all part of the same family, all going in the same direction and all wanting to do the same thing. And that's culture. I mean, people have to believe that they're all doing it for the right reasons. And that is just making sure that you're invested in with everybody.
Is there a certain leader out there that you look up to or that you admire some of their work across any industry? Is there somebody out there that you've read or been accustomed to and thought, wow, that's really somebody that has a special thing going?
Well, I look at people who have been, I'm in the college football space. So I'm always looking at coaches, right?
Right.
I'm always watching coaches and how a team rallies around a coach in an organization. I think I admire what Coach Sweeney does. You watch how his team rallies around him and how he leads and how he motivates. And, that's pretty impressive to me right now. Coach O, what just happened.
Yeah.
What literally just happened is pretty impressive. And that's a coach that got a team to all believe in the same vision and strategy and one game at a time. And it was a family. It was truly a family. You could see that in the celebration. You could see how they were celebrating as a family. That wasn't a one-off win. That was a family win.
It's true. So it's amazing how they connect.
That culture.
Yeah, it's amazing how well they connect with their players, despite the difference in age and experience and perspective. Like they are in there. They really do commit to the culture, and that's impressive.
Yeah. And you just love watching that. That's a school, but it's a business, just like any other business, and how you motivate everybody towards the end result is what we all try to do.
So let's go back to your first year as CEO of the Chick-fil-A College Football Hall of Fame. You were with Turner Broadcasting for 15 years. I'm sure you were very comfortable with the way that organization operated, your function within it, and then you jumped to a new role. When you shifted to the College Football Hall of Fame, were there any eye-opening moments that first year where it just felt completely different?
Well, I took this role for the city because I knew I'd be uncomfortable. And I think people need to know when they're going to be uncomfortable, and that's a big learning experience, always a learning experience. For me, coming into this role, I'd never been in the nonprofit space. College Football Hall of Fame is a nonprofit organization. Most people would say, yeah, but you're in college football, but we are a nonprofit. We're a museum. We're an attraction. So I'd never been there before. And in order to be successful in a nonprofit space, you have to, again, go back to relationships. You have state relationships, city relationships, conference relationships. You have to learn how to bridge all of those. So I knew that was going to be a huge learning experience for me and very eye-opening, but probably one of the largest learning curves I've had in my career. Just trying to understand different aspects of all those constituents.
Does it ultimately make it, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you know, when you're at a Coca-Cola or a Turner, you have your partners, you have your internal partners, your external partners that are pretty predictable. It's not as predictable here.
Yeah. Does it ultimately make it more satisfying when you know that not only that you're overcoming something that isn't as natural to you? Is there a certain part of it, like in year two, where you look back and be like, wow, this is really emboldening or satisfying as you go through this?
Yeah, it's pretty fulfilling for sure. And that's why I took the role on. I knew that I would be challenged in ways I never had been before.
Yeah.
And every day is a different day. And I love that.
So how do you view your role then? Because it sounds like it's very different from, you know, working in the nonprofit sector, like you said, comparing it to Turner or anywhere else. It's a much different role. I know you've talked about your responsibility to the relationships and building within the state and all those other primary stakeholders. But how would you view your day-to-day role and your priorities as CEO?
Well, my priorities, because we're nonprofit, is always around funding. We have multiple revenue streams. We have people that come through our doors on a daily basis. Then we do evening events here. Our space is set up so people can do events here in the evenings. We do about 240 of those a year. So
wow.
We're open during the day, but then at nighttime we become a whole different place. And, you know, the city of Atlanta is incredibly smart about bringing the College Football Hall of Fame here. Because it gives you a lot of varying degrees of revenue streams to make us sustainable. You've got events, conventions that are happening in our city. We're the third largest in the country. You got one of the largest airports, so you're a portal to the rest of the U.S., which exposes college football to 750 teams that are coming through our doors on a regular basis. That was really smart. You got, you know, your normal traffic flow of downtown Atlanta right off Centennial Olympic Park. So you have that attendance. And then we do, you know, we've got some great corporate sponsors. The city is surrounded with great corporate sponsors that allow us to exist. So the combination of all that and us being right in the epicenter of all things happening created college football to be central in all of it. And that's why you had national championship here. That's why you had Super Bowl here. That's why you have Final Four here coming up this year. That's why we have SEC Media Days here this year. That's, you know, ESPN award show. It allows us to be a national attraction in the city of Atlanta.
See, that's really interesting because I know that I talk to a lot of sports teams who are in a major city and they'll talk about how, you know, let's say the Red Sox talk about how the Celtics are kind of their competitor because they're fighting over the same discretionary dollar. But it almost sounds like you guys are in position to couple with the events in town so that somebody might come in and go to the College Football Hall of Fame and then go to a game. So it kind of brings your audience to the right spot. Is that right? Is that kind of the perspective you have?
100%, Brian. I will, you know, I say this all the time to the press that all the attractions are in this downtown area here. We do not look at each other as competition. We look at it as complementary. Our goal in the city of Atlanta is to try to hold people here. We want them to eat here, spend time here, be able to walk to everything, be able to go to these games. And it is just making sure that it's one quality experience when they're sitting in our city. And that attracts more large scale events and attracts more things coming, which is what we want. I mean, that's economic development at its core.
So for the College Football Hall of Fame, I can't imagine there's much bigger deal than landing a presenting sponsor like Chick-fil-A. As you look back over your accomplishments and your role as CEO, is that one of those moments where you look back and say, that was a good moment, landing, getting that deal with Chick-fil-A and put their name up there and having them a part of this? That was a pretty big moment.
Yeah. So I would love to take credit for all of that, and I can't, but I was able to bring them on as title sponsor. They were one of the original partners that allowed the Hall of Fame to get to Atlanta. And then we turned them into title sponsor. But so Truett Cathy and a gentleman by the name of Steve Robinson, who is the CMO for Chick-fil-A, he's now retired. They believed in college football. They knew the audience was spot on for who they are and what they are. And they went into the college football space in a big way. And then Chick-fil-A was the first to step up and say, we need to get the Hall of Fame here. So they've been a partner since the beginning, even before we were open, and a big advocate of us being downtown and them being a part of it. So our history goes long back. I will tell you, they're a phenomenal partner. Couldn't ask for a better partner, and wanting to make sure that we're always successful and the city is successful.
It sounds like they wanted to be a part of your experience and you guys wanted them to be a part of it. And so that was a match perfectly made. But I'm sure in your over your career, you've had some negotiations have been a little bit harder, or you've had to convince a little bit more. You've had to do certain things to make the deal happen. In your experience in negotiation and working big deals, what are the keys to making it happen? How can people that are younger and first getting started understand the essential components of negotiating a good deal?
Well, I deal with this is my day-to-day. You're asking what my day-to-day is. We're always looking for trying to bring new partners on. We're always asking ourselves what's the right strategic partners that wants to align to who we are and what we do from a mission and a vision standpoint. But I think the most important piece that gets lost when you're looking at partnerships and negotiations and brands, it's just really understanding what the common ground is, right? So if you have to build something that's going to be a win for both sides, and anytime that seems unbalanced, that's when somebody's going to walk away. And the art of negotiation is understanding what both people really want to get out of it, out of that partnership, and going, starting there and working your way out, not trying to work your way in. And that's when those negotiations go sideways, when somebody starts feeling like they're not getting the value out of it that they should be.
Yeah, that makes so much sense, because you hear so often people saying they want to win the negotiation, but really it sounds like most people want to find that space where kind of everybody wins, and that is out there, right? Is that kind of what you're getting at?
You have to. Even when we were at Coca-Cola working on the properties there, I happened to work on the Disney negotiation worldwide. And you can cut a deal. And if you don't believe that the years come following that in that partnership are going to be, if you're not setting yourself up for success in the future, there's no win. The win is when you're going through the partnership and both people are going, wow, that was incredible. I'm glad we've done this together.
Right.
And we're helping each other. Because if you walk away going, man, we just won that one, it's probably not going to work the next time around.
Yeah. I have personally been to the Chick-fil-A College Football Hall of Fame. Matter of fact, I had a really good Chick-fil-A sandwich there. It is a remarkable place. Obviously, it's a testament to the history of college football, but it's also, as you mentioned earlier, a premier space for private events. We were part of a private event when I was there, actually. During your tenure, you've made a concerted effort to land these big events, the SEC Media Day, Sports Illustrated Super Bowl Party, ESPN College Football Awards. Why was this such an, and you said 200 nights out of the year, you're doing private events. Why was that such an important evolution for the hall and your kind of purpose and mission?
Because we want to be, our mission is to really educate and inspire people around college football, right? Make sure that they know more, they learn more, they understand the history of it. And that's why we came to Atlanta. It was in South Bend, Indiana before that. But it's really about exposing us to more people. And those larger events, when you bring them here, put a spotlight on Atlanta, put a spotlight on the Hall of Fame. And I think that's really important to have national attention to the sport and what we do and the role we serve in the ecosystem of college football. You know, ESPN award show brings 1,000 media outlets to our front door, and every single one of them is talking about the College Football Hall of Fame. Anytime there's a large sporting event taking place here, we're always in the center of it. I mean, we have one in a couple of weeks. The Olympic marathon trials are happening in Atlanta. 100,000 people, their start lines right now up in front of the College Football Hall of Fame. Wow. Broadcasters are going to be, and it has nothing to do with college football, it's sports. But we're going to be central to that conversation. So I think it's important for us to always be in the context of and landscape of sports, especially when it comes to college football in Atlanta.
From a visitor's profile, do you find that a lot of former college athletes come back to kind of relive a little bit? I'm sure that a lot come back for private events, and I'm sure there's people that have their own displays there that have come to see them. But do you find that there's a nostalgia and just a vibe that comes from the people who come to visit who may have been a prior college football player and just can kind of admire the facility as a whole?
I think people connect to their team, right? And people connect to the sport through their team and through stories. So when you come into our facility, we have what we call fan ambassadors. These are trained people that mostly come from sports marketing backgrounds, want to get into sports marketing and learn more. But those folks are storytellers. We teach and train them to be storytellers, to talk about the game. And then we have an interactive pass. For those of you who haven't been here, your ticket is an all-access pass you wear around your neck, and there's an RFID chip in that. And that customizes you to your team and your experience while you're here in the hall. Everybody that comes in has a different experience, which is all driven off technology. We've won awards for who we are and what we do here. But it's really important because everything's always changing. We have over 65,000 pieces of content to foot up to 750 schools that exist, every school, every division.
Wow.
And we have over 1 million pieces of memorabilia that at any one given time, we only have 10 to 15% sitting on the floor. So a lot of stories to tell. Right now we're doing Black History Month and we've got a ton of stories. We got panel conversations going. Point being, there's always something changing and different and new happening here. Because we have stories. We're about stories, and we continue to tell stories, and that's what people connect to, is the story.
As a content guy, I love hearing that, because you're right. It is about the story, and that's how people feel connected and close to it. And it's a wonderful thing that you're doing, and I lived it too. Like I said, as a fan, coming and going there and plugging in my team and going through that experience just made it feel so unique and special to me. I really thank you for coming on the show, Dennis. I want to finish up with this. As you look back on your highly successful career, what specific advice would you share with young people that are still kind of finding their way in the industry, may have dreams and aspirations, but what's kind of an overriding thing that you might have learned, overarching principle that may help them propel them to greatness?
Two things. One, there's no linear path. Everybody believes there's one straight path. And I think that's a fool's heart. I think you have to get in, you look around and understand and learn and get it through experience is really important. It will find you if you have passion. And then the second advice I try to give folks that are coming up and through is you always have to look at yourself as a brand. You have to protect your brand and you have to really covet your brand. And, you know, social media these days tends to take people in places with their brand they probably shouldn't. And I try to remind everybody what you put out is what you're creating. So make sure you protect that as you're doing it. Think twice before you do it. In the world of marketing, and especially sports marketing, social media plays a crucial role for everybody. It's a great career, but it could be, it's sometimes harmful to you too, for yourself.
Well, I think that's fantastic guidance and so true, and something I tell my kids every single day, because social media is permanent in a lot of ways. And your brand is so important to you. Your personal brand is going to be what sets you apart. So Dennis, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing so much of your insight. All the best for the College Football Hall of Fame, and everybody listening should definitely go check it out.
Come see us in Atlanta, Georgia. We'd love to have you. Thank you, Brian.
I'm always a big fan of the leadership question. I love to hear how people who have reached the height of their industry view other leaders. And I think it's really cool that he cited coaches in college football. I mean, obviously he's staying on brand, but at the same point, it's like, no, he could look at Dabo Swinney and he could look at Ed Orgeron and say, look at what they're doing. Look at how they're able to relate. Look at how they're able to motivate and inspire and just lead in their own unique ways, but they're still pretty similar. I love that. I love that perspective. Thank you so much for Dennis coming on the show. It's great to hear from a CEO with as much experience as he has and has a global perspective. So thank you, Dennis, for coming on the show. Lots of great content coming in the near future, everyone. So please make sure you subscribe wherever you listen. Give us a review. Join our private Facebook group. We have this really cool group on Facebook where you can join it. It's the Work in Sports Podcast. Just search for it on Facebook, answer a few quick questions, and you can be part of this group. But it allows you to give me suggestions on who you want to see as guests. It allows you to have conversations with a lot of our guests who are part of the group. It allows you to talk and network with other people who are in the same shoes as you, young people trying to build their professional career in the sports industry. So join that group, become part of our larger community, and you know, just keep being a part of this show. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you to Dennis for coming on. All right, everybody, get back to work.